We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to the Fantasy Football Report. I'm Blair Andrews with my co-host, as always, Hassan Rahim. Hassan, how's it going?
You know, living the dream. We've got a fantastic guest. He was just about to tell us exactly what he was writing before the intro kicked off. Chris,
I interrupted him.
What's going on, man? Welcome to the repo. We're really excited to have you on. Thank you so much.
No, man, I appreciate y'all having me on, fellas. I mean, it's been way too long since we've been able to catch up. But yeah, I do the waiver report over Fantasy Life every week, and now that we've gotten into the playoffs, it's really not y'all know. I mean, waivers are still an important part of just like every week duties as fantasy football managers. But once you get into the playoffs, I mean, unless there's a massive revelation in terms of like injuries or whatever, I know we might talk about it, but like, you know, Chase Brown becomes, you know, guys like Chase Brown become interesting.
Hell yeah.
Those types of plays where it's like, oh, okay, I can see like at the very least blocking my opponents from having somebody like them on their roster. But it's not like back in like week 2, week 3, where it's just like we're spending our fab money on anybody we can in order to get like good players on our roster. So no, I mean, I appreciate you guys having me on, and like especially on you caught me on a good day. I mean, if the Bengals had lost, I might have been a little bit more downtrodden, but it's not a bad day to be hanging out in the southwest part of Ohio.
They put the beat down, man, on the Colts. Let's just jump right into it, right? Jake Browning, he completed 18 of 24 passes for 275 yards, 2 scores, and an int in the Bengals, a 34-14 thrashing of the Colts. Browning also had 3 rushes and 7 yards and a score. The interception was a pick six, but I think that I put it more so on Tanner Hudson than I would on Browning. I think the big story here, actually, as you mentioned, Chase Brown, he's won. But I really wanted to get your take initially before we discussed Chase Brown, who we're fans of. But really, Browning's thumb injury, right? He left. He was shaking his thumb out. He struggled to hold the ball, right? He returned to the game for just sort of a short while before he left and closed things out in the fourth quarter, right? So I wanted to get your take on a handful of things. One. So Jake Browning, is he a viable streamer quarterback for the rest of the season here? And, you know, just sort of where do you expect like any negative issues happening with his thumb? And actually, you know what, I'll throw in Chase Brown here. And three, why did the Bengals take so long to put Chase Brown in and give him this much work?
So I think from a schematic standpoint, I think what the Bengals coaches have done, and I've been critical about just like Zach Taylor, Brian Callahan, like just most of the Bengals coaching staff, like for probably like the past couple of seasons, where it just feels like unless Joe Burrow is out there doing just Joe Burrow things, like the offense like feels fragile. We've seen that pop up over the last season or so, where it's not especially during the weeks when, like when T was down, and it was just even the first 4 weeks when it was Joe Burrow on the calf injury, like shoot, if they had done as much planning as they had in order to make Browning look as comfortable as he had in this offense compared to like in the first 4 weeks, I mean, this run that they're on right now, still with the chances for playoffs, it might look a little bit better. But either way, I think for Browning specifically, the fact that they've incorporated like a few more like RPOs, I think using the utilization tool, Dwayne McFarlane over at Fantasy Life right now, like the utilization tool that they have there that allows you to look at not just the dropback over expectation rate for every single game, but also the schematic portion of each offense, like how often they're running RPOs, trick plays, personnel groupings, and all that. We've seen an uptick in RPO rate like over the past couple of weeks with Browning in there. So just allowing him to like move out of the pocket, work through play action, especially also like having T. Higgins back over the past couple of weeks, that's just made the offense easier, more comfortable for him. And also like the rushing portion. I mean, Joe Burrow, like once he got a bit more healthy, we saw that rushing component, that scrambling component, which has been so like much like an underrated part of his game. Browning has that too. And with the offensive line at least coming into form finally after 3 months, you know, 3 months into the season, we see Browning actually get out there and do something. So I think, you know, for the next like few weeks, especially since the Bengals, like they'll be in these, I think almost all of their remaining games, at least for fantasy purposes, will be against backup quarterbacks. So yeah. There's definitely a chance that we could see just a similar matchup to what we saw today. Their defense is still allowing, multiple scores per game. I know like one of the scores like was on a pick six. So like, I get that.
Yeah.
But like teams are still moving the ball relatively well against them. So I could see Browning still being like one of those, like if you lost Justin Herbert, you know, like from today, and you might still have a shot at the playoffs. Picking up Browning and playing him throughout the playoffs, I think, isn't the worst of ideas.
Yeah. It's I'm actually going to lose in one super flex playoff. I was in the play in, I guess. And my quarterbacks in the Superflex Dynasty League are, drumroll please, Justin Herbert and Geno Smith.
Oh, God.
I would have been better off playing Zach Wilson with my third quarterback, but I didn't bring him up for obvious reasons. And I'm going to get absolutely – I'm getting just the brakes beaten off me. This is – I'm actually going to like – I might actually ask the commissioner if he can like – censure this person for abuse against me. This is like not even fair.
I think that's a fair request.
When we were slated to kick off, any projections had me as like a 35 point favorite, and I was like, all right, this is good. Now I'm gonna I'm a live 65 point dog. So this is,
aren't those the worst? Cool. Like when you go into the weekend and you see those like pre-projections and just like, oh yeah, I got this. Look at all the players that I've got. Look at all these matchups. Everything looks great. And then you just like watch the games and you just see like your score just never, it's just like just inching forward versus the booms that you thought you were going to have. It's tough.
Yeah. But I wanted to stick with the Bengals for a little bit. I wanted to get your take. Cause like, you might have mentioned this earlier, but like a big part of this like offense with the RPOs, but also I think they implemented a lot of the screen game in here, right? Historical anomalies also beat me to the, that's actually the question that I had for you. I was trying to lead up to that. They've incorporated the screen game quite a bit with Browning under center, obviously to make some layup throws. So I wondered, like, do you think this is going to be a part of the offense going forward? Because I mean, like it, like, They got so much going with Ja'Marr Chase last week, right? And then we're still yet to really get primo T. Higgins, at least. So like my question is, like, do you think the Bengals will let Higgins go? Like what happens there? Because this is such a ridiculously good wide receiver core. So I was curious what your take was.
My initial lean is that it's a tag with a potential trade. Like they see what they can do from that standpoint. I do think that with the way that the season was going before Burrow got hurt, and with the fact that they do have at least from a cap space standpoint, like I know like paying, what would the tag be, like 15 million? I think something along those lines, if memory serves. I know paying a wide receiver at this, like for 15 million in order to do that, like isn't the most sound way of keeping the roster together, given the other needs that they currently have, like on the team. They could actually use like a second corner, safety, defensive line. I think they could use some help, like interior pass rush. But I think the core part of this offense, like has been those, like the primary two. It's been Chase and Higgins. Yeah. And while Higgins has had a down season, at least from a fantasy standpoint, yards production standpoint, I know he had like back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons before this year. But I think when it comes to moving the ball efficiently, like if the ethos of this team has always been passed first, I mean, Chase is now like, I think he's widened the gap from a target share perspective. But I think when it comes to moving the ball down to down, like keeping the chains moving, like Higgins is still involved in that. And I'm yet to see another pass catcher like on that offense that can step up and take that role. I mean, Tyler Boyd certainly hasn't done it. The tight ends, they haven't involved enough. I mean, Irv Smith, I don't know what they really expected of like signing him anyway. But like Trent Irwin has been fine. Like Yoshi has also been fine. But it's just like you will not have that same type of player that can at least win on like consistently or at least relatively consistently win in those contested catch situations out on the perimeter. They don't have that right now. So if this, unless this offense like structurally, like foundationally changes over the next 4 or 5 weeks as they close out the season to really show that they can do this without Higgins, what my thought is that they tag him, they try and trade him over the offseason, but if not, I mean, they're still going to need somebody that can do that. And unless their plan is to draft a wide receiver in the first round next year, I'm very hard pressed to believe they just let him go without having a solid plan B in place without having Higgins on the roster.
Yeah, that makes sense, especially because where they're expected to be picking. I was looking at Travis May's projected mock draft, and it looked like they're basically picking in like the primary, like where you can get a tackle or an interior, like or someone like solid for defense.
Yeah, and I think that's what they need.
Yeah,
like I know that like people were talking about not Marvin Harrison. There's another wide receiver coming out like next year. It has a Z in his name.
Odunze.
Yeah, I've heard like light mocks to him. I don't even want to entertain the idea of them drafting Brock Bowers. Like I'm not. let's not do that. But I think the focus has to be like their offensive line, offensive or defensive line at this point. I mean, that's because they just haven't been able to hit on free agency. I mean, like Karras and Kapper are fine, but it's just you need that homegrown talent, like almost like the Lions with drafting like Ragnow. I mean, like you have to be able to hit on those first round draft picks that become cornerstones of your offense. And with I know Burrow's entering like his the second phase of his career now with the contract. So if this team is going to continue to move forward, the ethos again is going to be pass first. You're going to need like one of those like at least a rookie player on a rookie contract to really help them move that forward. And I think that going offensive line is probably their best bet for the first round.
I want to back up a little bit on kind of the future talk. I mean, you kind of mentioned it. If the Bengals can show that they can do something with Higgins at the end of the season, that might kind of change the calculus here. But I mean, we saw them put up 34 points today, and Chase and Higgins really didn't do much for fantasy teams at any rate. I wonder if you think Browning is capable of making both Chase and Higgins, you know, kind of viable options for the fantasy playoffs.
I think so, because more or less, like outside of like once they get into the red zone, we've seen the tight ends get worked in. But overall, like the explosives, like for Chase, I think will always be there. Browning can like continuously looks for like if it's a man coverage, like those deep shots, like so far I think have worked for the most part. My only concern, and it's not really a concern, it's a concern for like Chase and Higgins, is that now that they've been able to showcase Chase Brown and they've been able to show that they have some versatility and speed like from the running game, do they have to live in that world where once they get in, instead of living in the world of third and long, can they now move into third and short? And that now opens up the playbook to guys like Tanner Hudson, maybe Drew Sample to a certain degree. And of course, like Joe Mixon and Chase Brown as options out of the backfield. So I think to your point, Blair, that does change the calculus, because now if they have a more dynamic run game, a more efficient run game, then now it's just like, okay, well, we don't have to rely on T and Chase, you know, to do cool stuff. It takes more of the pressure off of your quarterback, like whether it's Browning for the rest of this season or Burrow once we get into next year. So I do agree that if they are able to continue on, like continue plugging away at this idea that, you know, Browning allows them to put some speed, almost like, you know, the Keaton Mitchell-esque, like, mm-hmm. you know, part of like how the Ravens have now built their power run game with like Gus Edwards, but then you have the speed option with Keaton Mitchell. If they can do that with Joe Mixon and Chase Brown, then yes. I mean, that would allow them to say that, okay, well, we've got a bit more flexibility in the playbook. We got a bit more flexibility in our personnel. So having high priced guys, because I'm assuming the extension talks for Chase are either going on now or will be going on in the next like 4, 5, 6 months. So maybe we can live in this world where, as long as the guys that we currently have on our roster, Irwin, Yoshi, tight ends, whatever, and then maybe we draft a couple of guys afterwards, maybe we can do like that. Maybe we can shift into this next phase with Burrow's contract that continue going up. But otherwise, they might just hold pat and see like, all right, well, if we just push all our chips in and do this one more time, maybe we can get over the hump and then finally, you know, win that Lombardi that they tried to a couple of years ago.
Oh, it's sad. that was a really good team, man.
I was in a bar in Cincinnati watching that Super Bowl. It was that one was tough. That one was very tough to watch live. But I was just happy that they were there, watching, like seeing the curse of how many. I've been a Bengals fan for over 20 years now, so I've lived through the playoff drought, lived through the from Carson Palmer to Andy Dalton to, you know, watching Joe Burrow. So I was happy that they got to the Super Bowl. Wish they would have come out with a W, but I think with Burrow under center, I think we'll get back there soon enough.
Yeah, don't want to spend all time on the Bengals, although we could probably talk about them a lot.
It's going to hurt my heart if we do.
A lot longer. I guess maybe the big news of the week is, well, there's a lot of big news, but CJ Stroud is one of them, obviously looking like runaway rookie of the year candidate. Goes out of the game today with a concussion, it sounds like. I wonder, they also lost Nico Collins today too.
It did,
right?
Really early.
Yeah, this is an offense that obviously has some problems, as we saw today losing to the Jets. If Stroud has to miss extended time, for instance, you know, a few weeks, what does that do to this offense? Is anyone in this offense playable without Stroud?
I don't want anybody on that roster. I mean, was anybody really like looking for fantasy value with Davis Mills under center last season?
Right.
No, I mean, people were Charlie Brown rug pulled with Damian Pierce, man. He's been awful. Singletary seems to have completely won that backfield mm-hmm. work all to himself. Yeah, it is sad, right? I guess flipping the question a little bit, even with CJ Stroud back, right? Like, no more Tank Dell, potentially Nico Collins is out for a while. Is Noah Brown one of the targets in your waiver article is what I was trying to guess, ask, I guess.
I'll have him in there. I need to take a look at, I haven't looked at his targets per route run like from today, because my thought process from last week was that because it was his first game back from a knee injury he had suffered like 2-3 weeks ago, that it would take him maybe a couple of weeks to ramp back up. And so while my expectations weren't very high, I think that's going to be the biggest thing to see if like there's any sort of, all right, well, Davis Mills just like hitting the short area of the field, maybe with better coaching. I mean, I'll give it to him. I mean, all credit to Bobby Slowick and making sure that CJ Stroud is like very comfortable in offense in his first year. So I would lean more towards, yeah, guys like him. I see Mechie being being mentioned in the chat. Like, I think that like he did get a couple of targets actually like last week. So I'd be interested like in either of those two guys, but outside of that, it's kind of like, I don't think anybody's rushing to the waiver wire to add Robert Woods like in week 15. We're not doing that in the year of our Lord 2023. But like Noah Brown, John Mechie, like I think they move the needle for me for sure.
Yeah, this has been an interesting offense to discuss, also from the perspective of kind of their fair draft value next year in best ball drafts, for instance.
Yeah,
because it's someone where the receivers kind of, a lot of them have had big blow up games and seem to only do it maybe when one of the guys is hurt, one of the other guys is hurt. Tank Dell looked like he was coming on and being going to be, kind of the wide receiver one there. Now he's hurt. I mean, Stroud obviously gives them a dimension that makes them a pretty explosive offense that can score some fantasy points. So, yeah, I don't know if you've thought about it much yet, but how are you approaching some of these guys, or how are you thinking about them going into next year?
Each of them, I think Tank Dell for sure, like he's going to have to be like one of the early round, like wide receivers. I mean, from a targets per route run perspective, even air yards perspective, I think he was top 20 amongst all wide receivers with a 10 plus target share. I mean, it's not just he was producing relative to his rookie class, but he was up there like with some of like the better wide receivers from both an air yards and yards per route run standpoint. So I think both those guys are going to be like, both him and Nico, I think, are going to wind up being in the earlier rounds. I think this is just like stylistically, I think because Dell is the more of the, he can play on the inside, he can win on the outside, he'll probably get the nod, at least from an ADP standpoint. He'll have like the earlier draft cost. And Nico, because they'll look at his, you know, he plays more on the outside, explosives downfield. What was it, like 2-3 catches of like 30 plus yards, like just this past week, like it winning on explosives, even though Tank did them as well. Like that'll be more of, I could see him in like the 6th, 7th round, like somewhere around there. At least that's my general thought. Mm-hmm. Until things get steamed up, like you'll see stuff about, you know, Stroud over the offseason talking about his connection with Nico, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And I can see like both them getting steamed like into the fourth, at least him getting steamed in like the fourth, fifth round, somewhere in there. Yeah. But yeah, I think that entire offense is one that we're going to be like heavily targeting throughout the earlier parts of best ball season for next year for sure.
I think Evan makes a good point. He said Tank size combined with the injury is going to be a massive talking point, sort of suppressing his price. Yeah, I think Tank is going to go where Nico is going this year, right? Which was what, 7th round?
Once we got into like the back end of the off season, once we get into the August, I think it started off in like the 11th, 12th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was really cheap.
He was really cheap, and then it was like, oh, this actually might work. He's actually a really good receiver. So then, yeah. he got pushed up. Yeah,
right. Yeah, but then like Stroud's price kept falling. After Young.
Yeah, which didn't make any sense. I think it was just the unknown, right? Mm-hmm.
I think we went so much
off draft capital, like for Young.
Almost too much off draft capital there. Yeah, like I think, and then also like the questions, because like the entire offense had that Davis Mills stink on it, and like it was just so bad.
Yeah.
There was a reason why Damian Pierce was going so early, and then Nico is going where he did. Yeah, I think that's where Tank Dell is going to be. And then I think Nico goes much earlier. And then the question is, where are you taking Stroud, right? Is he like a 5th round ADP quarterback?
I think he'll probably be like where was Burrow taken like this year? 5th, 6th round?
Early 5th.
Like 4 or 5 turn.
Yeah, so I think that I could see Stroud being about there next year.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're talking about his pass catchers being in the earlier parts of like that, in that same general area, I would assume that Stroud like falls into the 4th, 5th round. So we're going to put, still have Hurts, still have Mahomes, still have Allen there in like the 2nd, 3rd-ish round. Let's see, Lamar will probably then come like shortly after that. Then I'd probably say like Stroud is probably going to be at like QB5, probably in like the 4th, 5th round, like somewhere in there.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think of what other quarterbacks, like from a season-long standpoint, that we would be more excited to roster.
No, there aren't very many. Burrow probably. I mean, Burrow's one. Lamar, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts.
We're not going to put Trevor in the same spot as
he last year. And Herbert is absolutely. I don't know what people were doing Herbert this year, but then he's done. I mean, we can discuss that now. Another injury, I don't have him listed here, but he's sort of left. And Brandon Staley mentioned that he has like a fractured finger, index finger in his throwing hand. Keenan Allen caught 6 of 12 targets for 68 yards in their loss to the Broncos today. All of Allen's yards, I think all of them, came with Easton Stick under center.
Right.
Right. And that's just really weird. I think Herbert probably is going to miss a few weeks, potentially. I mean, a few weeks now is what, end of the season, right?
I think, are they eliminated from playoffs, or more or less eliminated from playoffs?
I don't know, man.
Easton Stick just...
Not officially eliminated, but...
Yeah, but yeah. without Herbert, like, Easton Stick just feels like the white flag, man.
It has to be.
Yeah.
Like, at that point, like, if I was Keenan Allen, why go out there, like, anymore?
Yeah. Yeah, this is another team that it's been pretty interesting to discuss. You know, I think there was a lot of buzz on Quentin Johnson coming in today. Today might be like a career high in yards for him, 91 yards.
Yeah.
And we dropped him in our Emmy. That's why it happened.
Yeah.
Is this... It just took Easton Stick to unlock him, I guess. Is that?
Yeah. That is just so tough. I mean, how do you go into this season with after drafting Quentin Johnston, and then you see both like Zay Flowers and Jordan Addison like balling out throughout like the majority of the season? That is tough scenes, like right there,
dude. And everything broke right for Johnston,
right?
Like, in like the sense, like, no Palmer. Unfortunately, Mike Will was out. They don't Eckler has been hurt, and he hasn't been taking his usual like massive target share.
Yeah,
like how,
like the run out was perfect for him, and it's just like he couldn't do it. Like, he just wasn't ready for it. And then from a team building standpoint, like I get it. Like, I know that Herbert has like just a cannon attached to his right shoulder, and everybody wants him to air it out. And like him like throwing bombs to, like, I think like the moment that that Johnston got drafted, it was like, okay, well, take all of those targets that he was throwing to Jalen Guyton, down the field or whatever. Now just put those to Johnston, look at his college profile, and boom, we're in it. You know, AFC West champions, we're coming for it. Like, we're going to do this. But it's like, how about we just get a more efficient offense? How about we just get more first downs? Like, how about we just do that? And there were like two legitimate wide receivers drafted behind him that could have done exactly that, and they would have had the speed to win downfield too. But because Quentin Johnston almost looks like a Mike Williams clone, we just had to do it. That's tough.
Man, Mike Williams clone. I don't know if that's a compliment or not.
Oh, man. Matthew Friedman's a huge Mike Williams guy. I don't know, man.
That was rough.
I mean,
it sucks. It really, really sucks that like we were like, the run out for him was so perfect. And then if we can't, like, just one of the many, many players that we're just not going to be able to get, like, the right process, bad run out. I guess nothing is as bad as a Breece Hall run out, but.
Oh, yeah. But see, like, and since we were just talking about, like, what we're going to be thinking about these players for next season, I mean, don't you think he's going to be, like, one of those guys that's going to get drafted in, like, I don't know, he's going to have like a 14th, 15th round, like ADP, like somewhere in there. But then, you know, there's going to be the offseason talk about, you know, Herbert spending more time with him, talking him up. We'll see a few training camp videos of their connection. And, you know, by August, we're going to talk ourselves back into like eighth round Quentin Johnston. Because it'll be like, Mike Williams is just coming back from an injury. He's not going to be ready to go. Keenan Allen's going to be 37 years old. Who else is going to be, you know, who else is going to be catching targets from him? And we're going to be right back in it.
What I will say is that seeing him actually put up, you know, a decent game, albeit kind of in a meaningless game, but still seeing him do something, anything, has me not completely out in like the 14th or 15th round. Like, I'm kind of interested there. But yeah, I can definitely see him getting steamed up if there's some offseason talk. Do you think that if he can put together a few games more like this over this next stretch, that he could be a big riser?
Yeah, I think that if he almost goes the same route as, like, because, you know, like, you know, Jonathan Mingo has been like quietly, you know, getting like a bunch of targets over the past 2-3 weeks. If he just puts together those types of quiet performances, I know like today, because it was, you know, Herbert going out, it was a must-win game against the Broncos, divisional opponent, like, you know, playoffs were still in the picture, yada, yada, yada. I mean, that received like more attention. But now if we're just going to think of the Chargers as this team that's more or less playing for their 2024, you know, hopes, then if we see Johnston like string together and you see like 50 yard getting 60 yards, maybe like what was Jameson Williams like stat line from last, like 20 yards and a touchdown with that rushing touchdown.
Yeah.
Even if he does that, even if he finds the end zone at some point, I think that will give enough of us hope that, yeah, if he's drafted in like the mid to early teens, if that's going to be his ADP for next year, I think everybody can talk themselves into that. And then if we see some of those highlight camp, you know, like highlight videos from camp of Herbert and just throwing the ball, it's like, oh, he's got his fingers fine, Johnston's hands are good, let's do this, like, you know, Chargers, we're back. And like, I could just see that happening. And then it's like, oh, we're back in the 10th round.
Yeah. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With the holidays just around the corner, many people's thoughts will turn to gift giving and what to get for friends and family. And seeing the joy on people's face as they open those gifts can be a truly wonderful experience. Spending time with family unboxing gifts is always one of my true pleasures of the entire year. Whether or not your family gives gifts during the holidays, you get to define how you give to yourself. And the holidays are a great time to do that. So whether it's starting therapy, going easier on yourself during the tough moments, or treating yourself to a day of complete rest, remember to give yourself some love this holiday season. Early 2023, I began therapy, and I started doing it after thinking about it throughout the holiday season. So very much like I'm talking about today, it is the perfect time to start that process. I have found it very beneficial, and my plan is to continue it into 2024. It's been very valuable in helping me learning positive coping skills and balancing the day-to-day tasks and challenges that I have experienced. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. In the season of giving, give yourself what you need with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/rotoviz today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/rotoviz.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Actually, it's a good thing you brought up Jonathan Mingo, because I wanted to discuss this guy, Bryce Young. Today, man, was broadly just the worst I've ever seen. Like, just like, he completed 13 of 34 pass attempts for 134 yards. He added three rushes for 40 yards, right? His yards per attempt was below four. This is like the sixth time he's been under 4 yards per pass attempt in a game this season. Like, he was, sure, he was getting blitzed, sure, it's a difficult defensive matchup. He hasn't shown anything. Like, what are we doing with the Panthers next year at all?
I want no part. I say
you want
that,
no part, right?
Let me take that back, because it's just coaching has to be a factor in this. And
yeah,
I think y'all have probably seen them, but I know like folks that are listening, they've probably seen like the same clips of, if you watch Bryce Young, once he gets to his third, fifth, or like the back of his drops, and you just freeze frame and look at the receivers. There's nobody open. Like there's nobody open. Mm-hmm. Like there's like he's forced into throwing these tight window throws, which has really not been his strength. Stylistically, like he's just not capable. Like that's just not his thing. Mm-hmm. So if almost in the same vein of us, like, you know, praising CJ Stroud and like his ability to, you know, to like that, that was wired into Stroud. Like he's just one of those guys that, oh yeah, I'll throw that. Like I don't care. Like he can be double covered. Like it doesn't even matter. Like Young is not that way. And
no.
Like surrounding him with a coaching staff that would allow them in order to work receivers out of bunch formations, you know, more crossing, like whatever the case may be, in order to make sure that he has an open lane with an open receiver. I think the personnel just doesn't match the player. Mm-hmm. I think Stroud with DJ Chark, an older Adam Thielen, and even like Jonathan Mingo coming on, that would make sense for a guy that wants to like huck the ball downfield regardless of who's in coverage.
Right.
That does not suit a guy like Bryce Young, like at least at this point, like in the stage of his development. So I think if they wind up finding a better coaching staff to work with him, adjust their personnel a bit. Obviously keeping Mingo because we're just talking about him and the like in the targets he's been able to earn and like being somewhat productive over the past few weeks. I think that I could buy back into Bryce Young as a passer, but he's one of those guys that needs like the right environment in order to succeed, where it's like kind of clear that Stroud, I think even if they had retained some of like last year's coaching staff, like for the Texans, I think we would at least seen enough flashes that we would have been excited about him. But just having, you know, more or less like 49ers south, you know, like with the Texans now, I think that's definitely helped us realize like the true skill and capability of CJ Stroud.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really want to spend too much more time on this team because they're just like, they're just non-entities outside of Hubbard, but
yeah.
It's just a shame that they moved away a guy who would have potentially been a good stylistic fit in Bryce Young and DJ Moore, right?
Yeah.
That would be perfect. It seems like he needs that kind of guy. I wonder if I don't know if they're gonna be able, if Carolina is gonna be in a position to really draft a guy like that early.
Not now. Mm-hmm. I mean after the draft capital that they've given up and everything, I don't think they can do it. I mean,
there's just like, no way.
Like, do they have, like, what do they have for picks for next year? I mean, they've got, let's look. I mean, so they don't have a first round pick.
No,
it's Chicago, right?
They traded Chicago.
That's Chicago. So it's like,
they're six. They have their own second through fourth.
That's, yeah, that's tough.
You can get a good receiver in the second round, but this team, I think, has a lot of needs, right?
More. They need, like, yeah, they need more than that.
Like, they've, like, I mean, like, you can see them making a run for one of the receivers in free agency, right? But then how excited are we to draft Jerry Jeudy on the Panthers?
Right, because I know a lot of people were talking about T going to
or T Higgins to the Panthers.
Yeah, there was talk about him getting traded to the Panthers, like at the trade deadline. But because the Panthers didn't have their first, like, I didn't think there's any way the Bengals would have done that deal.
Yeah.
But it's like, so T with Bryce, okay, cool. I mean, that definitely moves the needle. But outside of that, it's like you need both the personnel and the coaching in order to really sell, right, not even just like fantasy football, but like real football fans, like real Panthers fans, on any sort of hope for 2024.
I think real Panthers fans have been pretty disillusioned for a while.
Yeah, they hate David Tepper. Like, if yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I also think that they're just not satisfied with the direction the team has gone since moving away from Cam.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, because I mean, they're now appreciating what they had in him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
a little far too late, fellas. But you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Here's a guy who I actually wanted to get your thoughts on in the future. Drake London caught 10 of 11 targets for 172 yards in the Falcons' Week 14 loss. You know, he averaged over 7 yards per catch. His longest catch of the day was a 45 yarder. He also, I mean, that catch also bailed out Ritter from an int. He caught the last bit of the game at the 4-yard line, just shy of a go-ahead touchdown as time expired. So I just sort of wanted to get your take. Where are we in on him, on Drake London next year?
So from an ADP standpoint, I'm assuming he slides back into, where was he this year? Sixth-ish round?
Yeah, like mid-fifth, right?
Mid-fifth, mid-fifth or somewhere around there. I think he slides back just like slightly. I mean, since we're talking up like the Houston guys and all of yeah, that, right. I could see him sliding back maybe a round or so. But for Ritter personally, like I always thought that he would like him alone, like without like without the with, like independent of the context of his offense, I thought he was a good receiver coming out. I wasn't always like in on the whole like the Cooper Kupp comparisons. Like while I get because you are a relatively lanky like wide receiver, you can work both as like an outside like off the line of scrimmage wide receiver, but also from the interior as well. Your calling card is being able to work like after the catch. I mean, all those things kind of like stylistically, I guess, like fit Cooper Kupp. But again, it's just like, all right, well, we're going to start comping people to Cooper Kupp. I mean, come on, guys, like we can. That's kind of tough, like by itself. So I think like London alone, I think he is a good receiver. I think it's just being paired with a guy like Desmond Ridder that's what makes it so much more difficult. Because if your game is timing, if your game is essentially like being at a landmark, running right routes, you need a quarterback that can do that. And that's really not Ridder's game, like in any way, shape, or form. And so I guess that's what makes me somewhat concerned about his future, because there's all like, I think the talk has been, oh, well, like after this season, what if we just like stick Justin Fields like in the Falcons offense? I mean, this thing would just go absolutely nuts. Arthur Smith, all his play designs, having a guy like Justin Fields there, Drake London and all that. But like, I wouldn't even say that's Justin Fields' game. Yeah. Justin Fields, like while he's been clicking with DJ Moore, it's taking what the better part of the season in order for them to get to this point. Right. So even like, I think even the prospects of like Drake London for 23 and beyond, I think he'll be more of one of those guys that we know the talent is there. Like him alone, I think he has been like one of the, like he is a good and efficient wide receiver, like full stop. But I think his situation will be always the thing that we'll point back to as being the thing that drags him down.
It was, I don't know if surprising is the right word, but kind of, surprising to see Atlanta even throw the ball 40 times and get targets to their top guys, something we've been kind of screaming for the whole season. And finally, they deliver in week 14. Is this maybe hard to even tell, but do you think this is a trend that could continue at least for the end of the season and going forward? I mean, obviously, if the Falcons lose some more, they're probably making some personnel changes, or one would almost hope. But
that'd be my assumption is that it's just going to continue. I mean, unless they just wholesale, and this wouldn't be until after the end of this season, unless they make a concerted effort at changing their quarterback. Doesn't have to be anything like schematically like different. It's just that you just need a better quarterback under center. Like Ridder is just not going to be that dude. And so for a guy like London, like that's what has to be, that has to be the type of quarterback, or he has to have a better type of quarterback under center in order for him to really excel.
Desmond Ridder is, I mean, it always goes back to the one tweet I saw on draft night of him, which is someone said that he looks like he flew planes in World War II. And that's how I knew he was going to suck.
That's so perfect too. Oh my gosh. Now I gotta look it.
You gotta look it up, man, because it's the funny, it's like just someone like just offhandedly tweeted it and just like colored my entire perception of him for his entire career.
That is perfect, because now I'm looking at this picture of him and that's all I see now.
That's all you see now, right?
That's all I see. It's just this battle-hardened man. Oh my goodness. That's so
dude, perfect. He looks like he's 63 years old in that picture.
Just this old man.
He's got like all the lines and everything. It's like crazy. So you guys got to look that picture up and then have it color your perception, because man, it's a tough one. Blair, you want to talk about the next rookie wide receiver here on our sheet? Someone near and dear to your heart?
Who, Zay Flowers? He's pretty near and dear to my heart. 6 of 10 targets, caught 60 yards and a touchdown in the Ravens win. Obviously, big win for Baltimore today. Flowers has looked pretty good, I think, the whole season. Man, he's another guy who, for me anyway, is tough to figure out where he might go next season. Obviously, you have Mark Andrews coming back, probably healthy, but Flowers looked pretty good with him even on the field. So, Where are you comfortable taking him next year?
If I had to think about it, early seventh.
On Zay Flowers?
Yeah, I think an early seventh. I'm trying to think of how many other like wide receivers I'd like, because I think, let's say, assuming like, I'm guessing Kirk Cousins is still with the Vikings next year. So I'm
thinking, we can assume that.
Yeah, so like I'm thinking I still want Addison like over him.
Yeah.
I think I still want Addison over. So it's just like, and we're talking about like the Texans guys and yada yada yada. So yeah, I think early seventh is probably about like that's just the starting point like for me. Cause it's just like Mark Andrews will be back. He'll still be there in the like the second, third round or whatever. Lamar doing his thing. I know that Odell Beckham is not going to be a part of the team in like 2024, at least I'm assuming that he's not. But it's just that it is somewhat concerning that, not to say it was a quick transition, but we have seen over the past like 2 to 3 weeks, especially once like Odell got healthy, leading in air yards, leading in targets per route run. I mean, that's something of a concern. And if the Ravens do wind up drafting a wide receiver or even picking up another wide receiver in free agency, I think that would at least create enough uncertainty that's where my risk tolerance would have me wanting to draft him at, just to see what this offense looks like with yet another, either a veteran wide receiver or like whomever they wind up drafting. Like if they get like a solid day two guy, I mean, is there enough like uncertainty in that passing game that it's just like Zay Flowers was good. I mean, highly efficient, like for a rookie wide receiver, but is it something that we should now bank on, especially given like Lamar Jackson's tendencies to at least still be like a runner of the football and passer of the football?
Yeah, it's an interesting take. I mean, my initial thought was that he'd be going quite a bit earlier, but you know, thinking about someone who's going to be the wide receiver one on an offense that's going to score a lot of points, or maybe wide receiver one. I mean, that kind of remains to be seen. But he's kind of been operating in that role already to an extent, except for over the last few weeks when Beckham's come on. So, yeah, you don't necessarily see, I don't know, like 1,200 yard upside that easily for Flowers next season. So it does become difficult to bump him up too high. But
he had an octopus today, which is kind of cool. That's where he scored a touchdown. He scored a touchdown and also got the 2-point conversion, so 8 points.
Nice, very nice. Okay.
That's a fun little thing I saw like all over Twitter, and I was like, I'm gonna steal that because that's such a cute thing to say.
Yeah, an octopus day. I dig it.
My sense is that if Flowers, you know, coming off the rookie season he's had, if he's going in the seventh, he might be my highest owned player, but maybe not. I'll have to rethink that when we see who else is going in that range, because there are a lot of guys who I want to move up higher. Addison, you named one. So
Addison is one. It's just, it's really tough to do this because when you see all the other wide receivers who are coming out as well out of college,
Right.
And then also the dearth at running back, it's just going to be I really don't like looking at what the potential future ADP like landscape looks like. It's I really think that your seventh round on Zay feels right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it feels right. But then at the same time, it's just we'll think about like how explosive he was like during the first month of the season. Like whether Beckham's there or not, if there's a way that he can now ascend like in his second year, get out, like bring on some more targets. So I guess it will be a fun debate to have to see like what that offense, or at least what the passing game core is going to look like from a personnel standpoint, like over the next season. So I think that's where you can start to make cases for or against Zay Flowers. Cause like if Beckham comes back and wants to, let's say they don't make it to the Super Bowl, but Beckham like wants to give it another go or whatever, the team wants to bring him back, then okay, fine. You can talk yourself into Beckham's another year older. Flowers has another year in the system with Lamar. Okay, maybe Flowers just takes over throughout the end of the year. Flowers should be like a, you know, a fifth rounder. Something like that. I can see that argument.
Who else did we want to touch on today?
Let's you want to talk about him? Diggs.
Stephon Diggs. Yeah. 4 of 11 for 24 yards. I mean, I think this is not...
What happened, man?
Not something necessarily to be concerned about long-term for Diggs, right? But it is definitely disappointing. Week 14, FFPC championship weeks. I'm sure that was a big blow for a lot of teams.
Could you pull up the Stat Explorer for Diggs? Because it feels this has been more so the norm over the last 5 or so weeks. I can't remember if he picked up an injury somewhere along the line, though.
Not that I know of. But yeah, you are right that it has been something of a downtrend for him. I think he's been lower in air yards. Actually, let me pull up True Media right now. And if anybody could ever get access to a True Media account, this thing is the freaking Matrix. They just got so much stuff. They got so much data in this. So let's see. Last few weeks. So actually, he did have, even today, 30.6% target share for Diggs. 11 targets, 8 targets. Air yards were around 22-23%. But then today, it was just over 30. I think the problem for him is that it's not as condensed of a target tree as it used to be. I mean, it was Diggs Davis, right? With Davis kind of doing his almost MVS stuff, where it's you'll get the deep pass, he might drop one here and there. But now you've got Diggs, you've got Davis, you've got Shakir, you've got Kincaid, Knox is back, Cook also getting targets out of the backfield. I think the competition, while I hate using the phrase too many mouths to feed, Josh Allen now has legitimate too many mouths to feed. And with Allen doing Allen things, once they get into the red zone, that does become problematic for a guy like Diggs, who has I think he'll always have the targets, but I think the production and those days of him going 10 for 100 and 2, I think those might be gone with just more guys available for Allen.
And that just feels bad. It feels sad. You know, look at those first 6 weeks, man.
Yeah, those are the good old days.
Yeah, we were so young then, man. We were so young then,
right? Because it really was just him. We didn't everybody was asking when we're gonna see Dalton Kincaid, because him and Dawson Knox, they were running two tight end sets throughout the first 4, 5, 6 weeks and trying to figure that out. James Cook was still battling with Latavius Murray and Damian Harris when Harris was still healthy. So Cook wasn't earning a ton of targets. So it was really most of the passing game was still going to Steph Diggs. I mean, because nobody else was earning targets. Nobody else was running enough routes in order for them to be relevant from a fantasy standpoint. Yeah. But then Knox goes out, so then that gives us Kincaid. They, Harris gets trucked, and so he goes on IR, so that gives us Cook. And then Shakir comes on because, of course, why not add a third guy to it? So now you get those splash plays to Shakir every now and again.
And Deontay Hardy.
And Deontay Hardy, so it's just little by little, each one of these guys has popped up out of the woodwork to take away from Diggs.
Yeah, you can kind of see in what I just pulled up how his air yards have just kind of taken a nosedive in the last.
That's tough. Yeah,
5 weeks basically. This doesn't have this week in it yet, but yeah,
that's a disastrous chart to look at, man.
I don't know if I don't know if it's just like you said, you have all these other guys popping up and taking over roles that would have been his otherwise when they weren't there, or if there's something schematic going on that's changing. But definitely there's something that is a little concerning about his usage for sure. So
yeah, I would be concerned. I mean, especially considering he's getting older. He's 28? 20?
Oh, I think he might be turning 20, 30 20? Almost.
Is he turning 30? I read if he's 20 or 29 and he's
30.
He's just already 30.
Yeah. So it's just maybe not to say that they're going away from him. Obviously, the dude just had 11 targets today. But planning for life after Diggs, I mean, that has to be on Buffalo's mind at this point.
Yeah. Well, before we get out of here, I did want to ask one of these questions in the chat. What type of beer is Chris brewing up during this time of year?
Let's hear. What are your favorite styles to drink? during this time of year, and what are you brewing?
So I actually do have a, this is like, I'm like super late to the ball game, but I do have a pumpkin ale that I've been working on. Every year I try and brew one. So I actually use pumpkin meat, like canned pumpkin, like in the mash in order to impart like the pumpkin flavor to it, along with like cinnamon, allspice, and a few other things in order to like give it that almost like a, you know, Thanksgiving Day like type feel to it. But like obviously we're like 2-3 weeks past it. Still works though for right now. Yeah. But my other preferred style around this time of year are winter warmers. I cannot do like porters, coffee stouts. I mean, the beers that just like are super thick. You drink one and like you feel like you need to go to bed afterwards. That's just not for me. No hate. Like I'm not gonna yuck somebody else's yum, but that's just not me. But winter warmers, I think, are at least like a fine enough like compromise where you are getting a lot of those like same like holiday like type flavors. You know, the people add in like, pretty much like whatever you want, like from a spice and like flavoring standpoint. And like that, I think those are more like just fun. I like making seasonal beers. And I think a winter warmer kind of fits into that. Winter warmers, like pumpkin ales, I mean, those types of things, like that's like typically my go-to this time of year. Before then, I just like, before we get to like the March-ish timeframe, and then I'm back on my, you know, everybody should drink like hazy IPAs. And I just go on that, you know, that tirade and just, you know, just turn into a beer snob again.
Everybody should be drinking hazy IPAs though, for real.
Hazy IPAs all year round, if you ask me.
Those are the best. If anybody's down in, if you're ever in Cincinnati, Streetside Brewery, like close to like downtown Cincinnati, I think they're in OTR over the Rhine. So let's see, Streetside. I need to look up the name of it. It's Streetside Brewery. They have a milkshake IPA. Man, like what is the name of just two dudes being bros, I think is that might be it. There's another one that was like a kid in a candy shop. That's what it's called. And if you look up the can art for it, cause I'm an absolute sucker for can art. I mean, your beer could taste like absolute piss water, but as long as like the can, like it actually looks pretty cool, you'll get me for a six pack every single time. But that kid in a candy shop, like by Streetside Brewery, is actually one of my favorite like milkshake IPAs that I've had in quite some time. But yeah, like I'll be drinking those from like the moment that we start seeing the sun here in Ohio until October, November of next year.
Yeah, we're spoiled for choice. I'm hoping to find these guys in my local beer store. If you see anything from, if you see a tart shake from Cinderlands at all out in Cincy, I would recommend anything that's got that or anything from Dancing Gnome that is a hazy IPA. Back when Dancing Gnome first started, they were exclusively a hazy IPA.
Oh, okay.
And they won like microbrewery of the year, like in the US Times. And then for like 2 years, I couldn't get in. I just couldn't get into the brewery.
Yeah.
Their releases were sold out. Like there were guys from like New York showing up to buy like 8 to 10 cases. And I'm like, I just want a 4-pack, bro.
Yeah.
Can you just leave me one? And they're like, sorry. We drove all this way, and I'm like, God damn it. They've branched out to the other styles that are just nowhere as good as their hazy IPA product. If I can get my hands on some, I'll actually probably send it to you.
Oh, I would pay you handsomely for it. So you just send it my way. I'll take it.
I ran into some people who'd moved back to Pittsburgh from Vermont. And the tap room, and I was like, what do you think? And they were like, yeah, this is like very much like a heady topper. And I'm like, yeah. And they were like, yeah. And I was like, yeah, you should try some of their other stuff. They've got some cool ones. They've started getting into Kolsch's. Okay. But it's just the hazy IPAs are where it's at. And there's one that there's a couple that I know that they do are really good. If there's any particular hop that you like, are you more particular to Simcoe or anything, just let me know.
I brewed typically with Mosaic, Galaxy, Citra. Like those are my three go-tos, like whenever I'm doing
Citra and Galaxy.
Yep.
Okay. One of their best beers that they do is called a Mosaic Jam IPA, and it's phenomenal. And they don't have it for purchase right now. But
oh, Oh, I'd definitely try that. Yeah, I think those. There's one, I think it's called Azaka. I think that's an Australian hop. I get that one every now and again. But I think, yeah, like Galena, Galaxy, Mosaic, Citra. I think those off the top of my head, those are like my go-tos whenever I'm doing a hazy IPA.
Nice.
We should pivot this to a beer podcast, man.
Like, oh man, I could go off on that like just all day long. A buddy of mine who he owns the brew store on the south end of Dayton. Like we do a show like once every week, once every other week, and just talk about like different beer styles and all that, what we're brewing, different equipment that's coming out, and just nerd out about some of the things. And whenever we go to competitions, like we talk about just like the different things that we, you know, talking with other brewers like from around the area. Like one guy that we know, he lives in like Middletown, which is maybe like a half hour-ish south of where I'm at. I think he's put about just short of 10K into his home brewing system.
Wow.
And just like all like just stainless steel pumps for everything. I mean, almost like zero manual labor like goes into like brewing beer for him at this point. It's just like load the grains and then just set your temperatures and like whatever profile that you want to hit. And then he just lets it go. And then like afterwards, like he'll just have like fermented alcohol, you know, like a week or so later. The only thing he has to do, I think, is just add his yeast like after he's done. And that's it. I was like, dude, that's sick. Like he's just a retired guy that just like loves the hobby. And like every year he just like buys like a new gadget or like adds this or takes that off or, you know, whatever in order to like make it less and less like he did like less human involvement like every single year. And I was like, man, one of these days I would just love to be able to get into that.
Hmm. Yeah. Do you brew alone or you do it with other people?
Mostly alone. Cause it's just it's like five. It's like, now I've got it to about like 5.5, 6 hours for a brew day. Whereas right. like when I first started, it would like take like an entire day.
Yeah.
In order for me to get through everything. But it's just like finding the time to do it. And now that I have an electric system, I can legitimately like do it in my office. I have the version 2 mash and boil. Which is like an electric system. It's actually sitting like 6 feet like that way like from me, and I could have it brewing like right now if I wanted to.
It's does that work? It's like an induction burner or something.
Yeah, and it has just a temperature controller, like a temperature probe, like down at the bottom to measure what your wort right. is going to be at, and then right. after, you just have to add your water and grains with a false bottom. And so, like after you steep your grains, you can just pull the grains and stuff out, let all the sugars that you've collected drop out, and then afterwards you just add your hops into it and like go through that cycle. And after that, like you're pretty much done. It is just so much simpler than. I built my first homebrewing setup where it was like you just buy one of those coolers yep. from like Home Depot or whatever, have like the braid the stainless steel braid like down at the bottom, and just like I put probably like $100 into like my first setup, and then bought that for maybe like $100 more, and just like the work is just like it's so much simpler.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about like temperature controlling and like all these other things that I was just freaking out about when I first started. But yeah, I would still recommend people just going that route and just buying a basic kit that you can get from like you can just buy it on Amazon if you wanted to.
Yeah.
But just to get started, learn the science, make mistakes. Because I've made so many of them. But it's just like, I think learning the process and figuring out like what not to do, I think that will inform how you should do things once you start like getting into a range where you're more comfortable with the more sophisticated systems.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. I used to brew. It's been probably like 10 or 12 years since
I did it last.
I should. I was doing it with a buddy, and I can't imagine having to like do all the stuff by myself and still have fun at it.
Yeah. But going to competitions, I think, helps.
Yeah, yeah.
We go to every one. It's down in Cincinnati, like, every year. I didn't win this year. I won for IPAs last year.
Nice.
And then my friend Joey, he got second best in show. I think it was either, like, a Trappist ale. Or I forget which style
he won
last year.
That's, Like that's a rare style.
Yeah, and like that's one of the ones that it's like if you like you have to be like technically on point as a brewer in order to score really well like for a style like that. So it was like it was really impressive that he scored so well. Because I think using the BJCP guidelines, the highest score you can get is a 50. I think I scored, I think my score for my last, for my beer last year was like 42, 43. I think he had like a 45. Oh. It's just, it's, it was insane. Like he did such a, such a good job with that one. But yeah, I think just being able to hang out with other brewers, like every now and again, just makes it like all the more fun because you get to hang out with other people that are nerding out about the same stuff that you are, you know, that sort of thing.
Right. Right. Totally. Awesome. All right. Any other late breaking stuff we need to touch on before we get out of here?
From what I'm gathering, this game sucks.
It's a shame the Eagles have gone from looking like shoo-ins to just, you know, just a complete non-entity of a team right now.
Yeah, this is
it just feels like the roller coaster the Niners were also on, right? Like where the Niners had like a 3-game stretch where it looked like absolute garbage.
Yes.
And then now they look at the best team in the NFC.
Yeah.
Eagles are on the downslope right now and they've got a very easy schedule.
Yeah, that's
it's going down the season.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to get you so before we head out, we need to have discourse. And I'm pretty sure I know what you guys' answer is going to be, but Brock Purdy MVP, yes or no?
No.
Yes. So I think for me right now, I think Purdy's probably the front runner. Mm-hmm. But I think Lamar should also be up there, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like I think it's Purdy, Lamar, probably Dak, and then mm-hmm. Jalen Hurts. I think those are your four MVP candidates. And I think
if Tyreek breaks 2K, should he get it?
Man, I'm actually all for a non QB getting MVP right now. Like, I mean, like Tyreek
would,
like that would be cool.
Like Tyreek, like Diggs did a lot for Josh Allen when he joined, right? Like sure. Our perception of Allen, our perception of Tua,
that's true,
would not be anywhere close to where it is now if it had not been for Tyreek.
Yeah, I don't think Jalen Waddle is doing enough in order to make us think about that offense the way that Tyreek's done for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just I think realistically, like I want Tyreek to get it just because I just want to see a like if he can't get it after the season, right? Mm-hmm. Or if CMC couldn't get it after a 2K season, like none of these guys are ever gonna get it, you know? And it's
right.
And like it's so frustrating for that to happen. CMC was 1K.
Right.
And if
right,
Tyreek yeah. and if Tyreek breaks 2K, then it's like it's still like what does a skill player have to do?
Right. Because yeah. I think last season when Jay Jettis got 1900? I think he got a vote. It didn't even feel like he was on the radar.
Right.
Yeah. And like what he did is like it was insane.
Right.
Like I don't think people appreciate that.
Right. And so that's where I'm with you, Hassan. Like I almost want it to be a non-QB thing because if it's not going to be a non-QB this year, and Hill breaks 2K, and if it's not going to be a non-QB this year, when we have so many questions about, all right, well, if Dak is playing well, but it's like he hasn't played well the entire season, he needed this run and like whatever. Purdy's played well. Two, but how do you separate his production from having all those weapons around him? And if there are legitimate questions you can ask about like all of the quarterbacks that are going to be up for this award, maybe outside of Lamar, because we've seen Lamar do, at least be a good quarterback before, just not in this way. So if there is ever going to be a year that a non-QB like should be up for the MVP, I think this should be the year.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
It's just, I don't know, man. Like I would love for Tyreek to win it.
Yeah.
Just cause
be awesome.
Like, I think it would be, yeah. I mean, the more I think about it, the more you're right. I think realistically, like his biggest competition right now is Dak, right? Like, especially cause it looks like the Cowboys are going to win today mm-hmm. and they're going to, but like, it doesn't look like they necessarily have needed Dak to do much. Like, yeah. Like Dak sitting on, at the half, he's got 14 or 23 completions, 157 yards, 2 scores. CD that tossed to CD and tossed to Gallup, but like I don't know, man. Dak's looked awesome, but like I think what Hill's done has been even better. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's just all the more impressive for a receiver at, like, honestly, a receiver at his age.
Yeah.
And to be this efficient, like, over, is he still over 4 yards per out run?
I think so.
Which yeah, which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, he's like breaking math there.
Yeah, because we would just assume anybody over 2 is good, and he's double that.
Right.
Yeah. And for people, like, could you pull up our advanced stats? Do we have targets per route run there?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, if you just pull that up, just so people, like, so we can actually give a visual to the people. Sorry, we're going a little long here, but.
Oh, we're talking about good stuff. I mean,
we actually have it in the Stealing Signals tool, which is kind of a little bit of a collaboration with Ben Gretsch. So this is the Stealing Signals tool, which you can see wide receiver, tight end.
Yeah, there it is, the TPPR, right?
Filter by team, for instance. Yeah. Tyreek Hill at 4.4 yards per route run.
Could you just
40% targets per route run?
Could you filter it by like everybody, like all the teams?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then just targets per route, and then just filter by targets per route run.
Yeah. Could take some of these guys, take some of the
run. Yeah, just the table's probably breaking, right?
Ty Montgomery, come on. Minimum routes, 100.
Yeah.
There you go.
I mean,
yeah. Like, holy smokes. Like,
40%.
Keenan, I mean, just dwarfing the other guys we would consider.
Yeah, and these are none of these guys are slouches.
Right.
Like that's just ridiculous. I mean, that's like ridiculous.
That's MVP. That's most. Yeah. I mean, that has to be it. To me, that just stamped, like, that just blows. If you're blowing away, like, the best of the best at your position, I mean, just unequivocally. I mean, to me, that just screams MVP.
Yeah, it's really frustrating because, like, none of these quarterbacks have really, you know, truly separated, right? Because, like, I mean, like, just to put a hypothetical out there, not saying this will happen, we just kicked off the third quarter. If the Eagles come back and beat the Cowboys, right? Mm-hmm. Then you're probably going to say Hurts is the best quarterback for MVP, right?
Right.
Like, we're back to that discussion. Whereas with, like, yes. Tyreek Hill, we don't have another. We don't have somebody else. His closest competition is.
That's like a funny way to think about it, because it almost feels like every week, like, the narrative will change based off of the results. After Purdy went on, you know, their 3-game win streak, it was like, oh, Purdy has to be up at the top. And to your point, Hassan, if like Hurts were to come back tonight, it would be like Hurts, like, is now at the top, despite them just getting plowed by the 49ers last week.
Yeah.
But it's just like Tyreek, there's nothing he can do to change the narrative. Like, there's not, like, he has to continue doing this, like, every week. There is no, like, he can't have a game off. Like,
that's so ridiculous.
Right? Yeah. Like, he can't go out and have like a 50-yard game and then come back and have like another one of his, you know, 125, 150 yard games, and everyone would be like, oh, Tyreek is back in the, you know, he's back at the top of the MVP count. Like, he just has to keep doing this every single week.
That's why he's been playing through like an injury too. Like, he picked up an ankle injury and he's been like fighting to stay in the game.
Knows it. Yeah, he probably knows that unless, like, he has to do this or else there's just no way for him to even get considered. Whereas with quarterbacks, it's just every week, depending on the narrative around, like, your quality of win or like your loss or whatever, that will just instantly sway, like, how people, like, even just from a betting market standpoint, you've just seen, like, each week Purdy's odds have just, like, just every week.
I mean, everybody's odds, like, when they're going to reopen again, like, I think Purdy's going to be, I think it'll open with like Purdy and Dak as like co-favorites, or like if Hurts does it, then he's going to be like an actual favorite. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's just going to be like, it just feels like, I don't know. And I know Matthew Friedman said this before, but it really is like a narrative driven award. And it's just so frustrating that, like, they're not willing to focus on a non quarterback position for once. Like, I was actually laughing about the Heisman thing when like Ian Hartitz tweeted, Marvin Harrison Jr. was robbed of the Heisman.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like he's kind of right in a sense. Because, like, I mean, what Marvin Harrison Jr. did for Ohio State is what he's done for like 3 years for them is just disgusting. Yeah.
Well, yeah, on that note, say we call it a night. Chris, you want to tell the people where they can find you and all your stuff?
Yeah, no, first off, I mean, thanks, fellas, for having me on. I mean, it's dope being able to come on here and talk ball with you guys for an hour. But you can find me on Twitter at ChrisAllenFFWX. All of my writing is over at the Matthew Berry's Fantasy Life. I'll be doing the waiver column, doing shows with Ian Harditz and Dwayne McFarlane, matchups podcast. And of course, I still do the FFWX in my Twitter handle, still doing stuff about weather. Actually wrote up the Baltimore game for the Baltimore game and also the Jets Texans game for today. And if you'd seen that, I would have been like, hey, just play all the core plays. Don't try and get cute with your roster. So if you had Lamar on your team, you should have been starting Lamar. Even wrote up a guy like Odell Beckham being somebody that you should have continued holding on to, something like that. My stance has always been most of the stuff gets overblown. Don't panic. Just play the guys that you think are at least in the right situation. Break ties in favor of other guys that have similar opportunity, but in better game environments, that sort of thing. That's always been my stance. But either way, you can find me on Twitter, Chris Allen, FFWX. Any questions at all, come hit me up.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely check out Chris's work. Lots of great advice there. Help you win some of these matchups. And so, yeah, thanks so much for hanging out with us. And we will talk at you next week.